Week 12, Overview, FDR and the New Deal. We're studying the period when Adolf Hitler came to power in Germany this week. We'll touch on Hitler, but our main focus is on President Franklin D. Roosevelt back in the USA. We've learned how FDR became governor of New York and then, in 1932, near the start of the Great Depression, became president of the United States. People trusted him at this dark hour to help the economy recover. Roosevelt infused new hope into Americans by his promises of immediate action, his good cheer, his confidence. They believed him when he said they had nothing to fear but fear itself, and promised that he would give them a new deal. Roosevelt didn't disappoint the people who voted for him once he took office. He delivered on his promise of immediate action. In the first 100 days of his first administration, Roosevelt proposed, and Congress passed, more new legislation than any administration had ever done in the past. And not only were there a lot of laws, but the laws themselves created a whole new relationship between the American people and their government. Roosevelt was not only committed to aiding suffering individuals in the short term and to helping the overall economy to improve, he also thought the federal government should pass new laws to ensure that a national economic collapse of such epic proportions could never happen again. Congress gave Roosevelt a lot of latitude, but he didn't govern unopposed. Students will read about Roosevelt's battle with the Supreme Court justices, and also about the tensions between labor unions and business managers that threatened Roosevelt's New Deal. FDR promised a New Deal at his nomination speech before the Democratic National Convention in 1932. FDR's opponent, Herbert Hoover, thought relief was the task of the states or private charities. FDR pledged that the federal government would fund and operate a relief program for individuals and private enterprises unlike anything America had ever seen. Given the choice between more of Hoover and a brand new deal, America picked FDR. He took office in March 1933, the last American president to be inaugurated in March, because the country had just ratified the 20th Amendment, which moved Inauguration Day to January. FDR's first 100 days in office set a standard in American politics. Every president since has tried to hit the ground running like FDR, but no president since has gotten Congress to do so much so fast. FDR had an extraordinary window of opportunity, but so have other presidents since then, as we shall learn over the rest of this year. FDR was unique. FDR skipped the usual round of formal balls and ceremonies after his inauguration and started work that afternoon. His agenda consisted of three R's: relief, recovery, and reform. Roosevelt originally planned to ask Congress to address the banking crisis and then adjourn, but when they passed that first act in record time, he decided to keep Congress in session and keep going. Within his first 100 days in office, FDR and Congress enacted 15 major laws, creating an alphabet soup of new agencies. There was the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC, which was created in order to protect individuals' money in the case of a bank failure. This program, in turn, strengthened the Federal Reserve Board, which regulates the American money supply. A Federal Securities Act, enforced by the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, added new regulations to stock offerings and trading practices so as to avoid the rampaging speculation that had helped bring the stock market crashing down. The Civilian Conservation Corps, CCC, gave thousands of men work on projects in the national forests, parks, and public lands throughout the country. The National Recovery Act, NRA, established the Public Works Administration, PWA, which worked to create a code of fair industrial practices, such as minimum wage and maximum working hours. The Agricultural Adjustment Administration, AAA, was established to help increase the prices paid to farmers for their crops. The Tennessee Valley Authority, TVA, gave jobs to men to build roads, dams, and hydroelectric plants in 7 of the poorest states at that time. These big new federal programs helped restore some confidence about the economy. The FDIC gave people confidence in the banks, the Federal Securities Act helped restore trust in the stock market, and the Public Works Administration helped bolster employees' trust in their employers. The legislative activity also showed that FDR was serious about improving the immediate situation of the average American worker. Within a short amount of time in office, thousands of new jobs were created, such as those with the CCC and the TVA, and many people who had been unemployed got work. There was a problem with many of these big new federal programs, however. They weren't constitutional, at least not according to the Supreme Court. there were enough conservatives on the court to strike down a number of FDR's big new programs. The founders had written a constitution that created a strong but limited central government, which was designed to do a few things well and leave everything else to the states and to the people, respectively. But FDR rejected traditional constitutional limits, and he rejected traditional economics, too. The architect of his economic policy was a British economist named John Maynard Keynes. Keynes was a brilliant man with an impressive resume. In addition to an education at Cambridge University, Keynes had held a position at the India Office. He'd managed the British Treasury. He had served as economic advisor to the Prime Minister during the First World War. Keynes also wrote a book wherein he voiced concerns about the punitive measures placed on Germany after World War I. His book highlighted the difference between himself and most other economists of the time. Keynes did not believe that free markets would correct themselves without intervention by the government. According to Keynes, the government must act when investors fail to do so. Keynes urged the government to jumpstart the economy by spending enough money to entice businessmen to start investing again. FDR's government started spending money it didn't have on projects and people. This was a big departure from America's traditional capitalist ideals. In the long term, these economic practices substantively changed the relationship between the American people and their government, since the government now took on the responsibility of providing for people in trouble. The lasting effect of this New Deal is that many Americans believe it's the federal government's job to solve their problems, regardless of where those problems come from. This sense of entitlement doesn't originate in the Constitution, however. It took root as America struggled through the Great Depression, and politicians of both parties have kept it alive with ever-increasing government programs ever since. Well, these were big and controversial changes. That's why FDR faced some strong opposition when he ran for re-election in 1932. On the political right, people called FDR everything from a socialist to a fascist. They charge him with being a traitor to his class and to the Constitution. Those on the political left accused him of not doing enough to fix the economy faster. His re-election bid was helped by a small upturn in the economy. Millions of new jobs had been created, farmers were earning more money for their crops, industrial production was the highest it had been since the stock market crash, and though unemployment was still high, many people had received help from the government to keep their homes and land. Thus, the American people felt that Roosevelt had earned their loyalty. Without hesitation, they elected him to a second term. The small improvement in the economy that helped FDR get reelected quickly faded away. Professional economists have spent a great deal of time and ink arguing about why. Liberal economists say it was because the government didn't spend enough, while more conservative thinkers say it was because the Federal Reserve raised interest rates too soon, snuffing out the feeble recovery. Whatever the reason, the Great Depression ground on. It didn't really end until World War II. The dark clouds of war were gathering on the other side of the Atlantic. The economic crisis that put FDR in the White House helped Hitler take over Germany. Desperate and discontented Germans turned from their traditional leaders to radicals on the left and the right. Many Germans were angry that life was so hard, and they blamed either losses in World War I or the current government for their troubles. Hitler's propaganda purposefully capitalized on these feelings and inflamed them. Hitler used thugs, just untrained bullies who loved violence and torment, to intimidate, to even murder his opponents. One can think of these men as counterparts to the American gangsters, except they were even more brutal. They were called the Brown Shirts, or SA. Hitler also employed propaganda skillfully. He used radio ads, the press, books, and speeches to promote his big lies and also to misinform the German people about any events that challenged his regime. Hitler consistently used whatever power he had to seize more. He soon made himself the absolute ruler of Germany. Hitler and FDR took office within a few months of each other, rising to power during the Great Depression. Both made vast and arguably unconstitutional changes to their respective countries. Elites in Washington and Berlin believed the free market had failed, and they called for government intervention, and Hitler and FDR each obliged. Though there were eerie similarities between the men, there were vast differences. Roosevelt enraged Republicans, but he never needed secret police to maintain his power. He was popularly elected, and he remained popular throughout his unprecedented four terms in office. Roosevelt offered help to Americans in need. Hitler, by contrast, offered revenge to Germans who felt humiliated. FDR promised to pay more people. Hitler promised to make people pay.